For a long time, the United States has prided itself on its free market values, where countries in Europe or Asia have embraced a bigger role, the role of private industry. But our next guest says in recent decades, we've gotten that all wrong. He says if you look at the data, Europe is actually where you see some of the healthiest competition. And he says American consumers and workers are paying the price. Thomas Philippon is a professor of finance at New York University's Stern School of Business. His new book is The Great Reversal, How America Gave Up on Free Markets. Thomas, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you take an epic journey through economic theory and the economies of the United States and Europe in this book, but you started off with a really simple question. Can you talk about what led you into this book?
Yeah, so I came here 20 years ago from France, from Europe, and 20 years ago I was struck by the fact that many things were much cheaper here in the US than they were in Europe. And what struck me in recent years is that this situation has reversed. And it's striking that American consumers are paying by far much more for their cell phone plans than pretty much anybody in any other country.
That's something that might come as a surprise to Americans. And you're right, it's not just cell phone plans, it's internet and many other things. And we're not even necessarily getting any better quality than our European peers. Can you spell out how big a difference there is?
So the difference is in the telecom industry, the differences are staggering. It's like a ratio of more than 1 to 2. So take your typical household in the US, having broadband internet at home, they would pay something like $70 per month for Comcast or like Verizon, broadly speaking, for like high-speed internet. So $70 per month in the US, the same thing in Europe costs about $30. Okay, so it's like 30 versus 70. You're paying an extra $40 per month just for that. For cell phone plans, it's about the same. So the basic cell phone plans in Europe start around 10 euros. Some you can get unlimited data for maybe 20 or 30 euros per month, which is less than half of what you pay here for the same service.
Now, there's a stereotype, I think, among American economists, certainly American politicians, that here in the U.S., we do the free market right. Over there in Europe, there's this hidebound bureaucracy that limits the economy. You say if that were true in the past, maybe it's changed. What is driving that change?
Oh, it was definitely true in the past. And the reason people are still convinced that it's like that is because it was a defining feature of the U.S. 20 years ago, or for most of the post-war period, really. It was a defining feature of the U.S. that it had the best free market. And when we say that, it's not on some abstract concept. Free market means, as a consumer, you get a good deal in the sense that you have lots of choices and you don't pay too much. Okay. Today, that's clearly violated. If you want to buy, let's go back to broadband internet. On average, most households in the U.S. don't have two choices. They cannot choose for more than two providers to get broadband internet at home. The median household in France has five to choose from. Okay, so not surprisingly, when you have five, these guys compete for their customers, and therefore their prices are much lower. So why is it like that now? I think it's actually both sides of the Atlantic changed. The irony of the story is that Europe changed mostly by importing good American ideas. So the reason Europe has very competitive market in the telecom sector, in the transport sector for airlines, cars, and trains, most of the time, if you look at the reason, you see that Europe adopted ideas about regulation or deregulation that were first implemented in the US. So by and large, you can think of what happened in Europe was a successful import of good American ideas. So it's a bit of an irony that today American consumers are, getting the bad deal while European consumers get the good deal. In the US, what happened was a reversal of a long tradition, of free markets. And you can see it, it goes all the way from antitrust for very big firms down to licensing requirements at the state level.
Thomas Philippon is with us. We're talking about his new book. It's called The Great Reversal, How America Gave Up on Free Markets. Thomas, in your conclusion, one of the things you say surprised you was how fragile free markets can be. What happens when a company gets so successful that it can start to control, have influence over the regulations that are placed on itself?
Yeah, so I think that's the biggest issue. You get the thing that's fragile that I didn't quite realize before writing the book is, usually when we think about the economy and the markets, the reason we don't worry too much about monopoly power is because we think that if in a particular industry firms are making too much money, well, then they're going to attract competition. People are going to notice that the margins are very fat in a particular industry, and therefore they're going to go there, compete, and 5 years down the road, you're going to have lower margins and more competition. So, but the key mechanism there is entry by new competitors. And this is the thing that has failed in recent years. So the big firms in many industries have been really good at preventing entry and competition. Now, the way they did it is always a mixture of, lobbying to get their mergers approved, lobbying to get the regulations they want, very aggressive tactics against would-be entrants, what we call predatory behavior. And all of these pieces together means that they've successfully managed to, prevent competition in many industries. And at the end of the day, it's the consumer that ends up paying the price. And it's a lot of money. I mean, so I do the math in the book, but the median household in the U.S. earns about $50,000 per year, give or take. Now, for that person, for that household, they are losing about $5,000 of real income, of real purchasing power from excessive rents, from excessive prices and monopoly power throughout the economy. So that's a lot of money, like 10% of their income.
And part of the story, you mentioned lobbying, and you also have a chapter on campaign finance laws being different between the United States and Europe. Do we have a system here that gives a corporation, if I have this powerful corporation, does the American system give me more influence, more sway than I might have in the European Union?
Today, yes. But again, that's somewhat of a reversal of history. Of course, lobbying has always existed, and lobbying is oftentimes a good thing because you need industry to have a voice if you want to have good regulations. So it's not as if I'm in favor of banning lobbying. I think that would be I don't think that's the right way to think about it. But excessive lobbying power, that's a problem. And I think it becomes excessive when the politicians themselves become dependent on very large campaign finance contributions by large firms. So that speaks really to the issue of campaign finance. I think the biggest difference today is that regulators in Europe, sometimes for funny reasons actually, and these are like some unintended consequences, but the good type, regulators in Europe ends up being very much more independent from lobbyists than they are in the US. And so they keep enforcing the rules of free market without paying too much attention to lobbyists. Well, in the US, the regulators are much more subject to heavy pressures by lobbyists, either directly or indirectly via elected politicians. So I think that is the heart of the issue in the US today.
We pick up our conversation with Thomas Philippon, author of the book, The Great Reversal, How America Gave Up on Free Markets. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest about how the U.S. and Europe compare on things like regulation, on prices of key products, on policies, on things like lobbying and campaign finance, the influence that gives companies over what the laws that regulate them? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Thomas, before we bring on a caller, I want to talk about the latest news with the coronavirus, Congress working on an economic relief plan. You have tweeted recently the concern that some of the same companies you're looking at with lobbying power might be able to sway the system, abuse the system of relief to their own benefit. What are you worried about?
Yeah, I'm worried about the wrong companies getting the dollars from the government. So I think that the relief should be first and foremost targeted towards people who lost their jobs and small and medium-sized enterprises. People who lost their job, that's for obvious reasons, because they are left with no income and no chance to find a new job because people are supposed to stay home. And that actually is quite difficult because people who were in the gig economy or had part-time work or freelancing, you know, they don't typically have access to unemployment insurance. So you need to design the packet in a way that also reaches these people. I think that's very important, and that's the improvement we've seen today in the new deal that's being discussed in Washington. And the second thing is on the firm side, I think the large firms have many ways to get liquidity. They have commercial paper, they have bonds, they can access this through in various ways. The small firms are the ones who need the support. And the problem is they don't have the same lobbying power. And so the first thing you saw after the beginning of the crisis was airlines lining up for government money. Well, bailing out the airlines is not the priority. You know, bailing out restaurants and small businesses is the priority.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Robert on the line in Chicago. Robert, hello.
Howdy, and thanks a lot for the show. I just think that the whole situation can be viewed, and I hate to bring strong terms. I don't mean to point fingers or be outrageous, but quite simply, our national legislature and our state legislatures are corrupt, and it's a nasty word. I actually don't even want to use it, but it means that the people that they owe for getting into office in the first place are moneyed interests who
gotcha,
then use-
Robert, I want to jump in because we don't have too much time with Thomas. He's saying whether you want to use the word corruption or not, Robert, pointing toward legislators at the state and national level being beholden, he says, to some of the corporations you're talking about.
Yeah, but corruption has always been a problem in every country. The U.S. historically is not a very corrupt country. So, but I think that you can be influenced by lobbyists even if you're not corrupt. I think it doesn't necessarily come with a moral statement. It's just that if you need to spend half of your day dialing for dollars as soon as you're elected for the next campaign, that's a problem. That means you're just not going to do your job properly.
Thanks a lot for the call, Robert. We'll go to Marcus now with us in Madison. Marcus, hello.
Yeah, yes. Thank you, Mr. Philippon. I wonder if you could comment on this. The United States has always been prone to the concentration of large monopoly corporate power. And I think it's significant that the U.S. is one of the only major developed country that doesn't have a labor party. And the labor union movement in the United States since World War II has mostly acted as a disciplinarian of the union workforce rather than as an actual advocate for workers. And since we are so weak in that regard, I wonder if you could comment, please, on whether this is a factor.
Marcus, thanks. Thomas, yeah. The role of labor.
Yeah, so that's a very good question. It's also a very complicated one, so I will not be able to do justice. two key points. The first one is, monopolies have been important in every country. The U.S. both had a tradition of big firms, but also a tradition of busting the trusts. You know, from Teddy Roosevelt onward, the tradition was that you were also suspicious of big firms. In fact, after the war, after World War II, the U.S. implemented in Europe some of its policies, in particular in Germany, by removing the big firms. So that tradition is also very strong in the U.S., so I think that's the first point to keep in mind. The thing that's important also is, in the past, this was a bipartisan issue. Like in my book, I try very hard to show that this can be a bipartisan. It's not Democrat versus Republican. Everybody has an interest in free markets. And everybody means both the left and the right and labor. If you look at the debate in the 70s and 80s with respect to big firms at the time, where the airlines and AT&T, actually there was some consensus. And there was work both by the labor movement and the antitrust lawyer to think about antitrust. Because to be honest, like having competition in the goods market is the same as having competition in the labor market. And that can also be good for labor.
Thanks for that call. Thomas, we have just a couple minutes left. Give us a policy prescription or two to try to bring back what you'd like to see, a real free market competition that could drive down costs for American consumers.
Well, okay, so priority number one is to, now we are talking about hopefully after the coronavirus lockdown of the economy. But clearly, priority number one is going to be protect small firms and medium-sized firms because they're going to be hurt the most. So, you know, first do no harm is should be the main mantra here. And the big firms are going to survive the crisis. Make sure the small firms also do. That would be point number one. Point number two, tighten up a lot merger reviews. So I think we've seen way too many acquisitions in particular by large tech firms of firms that could become their competitors. So we need to put a stop to that. The third one would be make sure that this is done in a bipartisan spirit, because this is the kind of long-term policy that it doesn't work very well if every 4 years the new administration tried to undo what the previous one did. So the most important is to try to create some consensus about what free markets are, why they are good for everybody, from the entrepreneurs to the workers. And then once you have this platform, then you work on it.
Thomas, thanks so much for joining us today. That's Thomas Philippon, an economist from NYU's Stern School of Business. He joins today to talk about his new book. It's called The Great Reversal: How America Gave Up on Free Markets.